I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss candidates running for outgoing Representative Regina Quick's seat, as well as candidates running for governor, recent protests over Medicaid caps and cuts, and T-Splots projects. All that and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are Gwen O'Looney with WXAG, Blake Odd with Flagpole, and Rebecca McCarthy with Flagpole. So once again, thank everyone for being here today. I guess we might as well go ahead and start with the House District Seat 117. Regina Quick has already announced she is not going to run again, and there are some people who have announced they are running.
Well, people are running, and I don't know if we can say that Regina has actually announced that she's not running yet,
right?
Because I don't think she has, but that's she's been kind of radio silence lately, but that is coming from, you know, several other reputable sources.
Right.
So,
well, so let me not speak for Regina Quick.
She's on the list for judge,
right?
And she's counting on the fact that the governor will appoint her a judge.
So she is a finalist for Judge Sweat's position, and he is retiring
soon, the end of this
middle
month.
Of next week,
And the governor will definitely appoint a Republican because that's the way he thinks. I mean, they're not going
to
look at merit.
Yeah.
Not that that's a reflection on anyone on the list, but the judges only put forth Republican, someone that the governor might appoint, recognizing that in 2018, citizens of Athens-Clark County can decide.
There will be an election, and there's already one candidate for that judgeship who's not on the finalist list, running, who is Lisa
Lott. Yes.
Who works in the public defender's office and is married to Doug Haynes, who a lot of folks might remember.
Well, Lisa,
used to be our state senator 10 or 15 years ago.
She has, she's worked in a lot more than she's the only one. Judge Sweat was the only judge we had still living in Clark County. And I just think that's unbelievable that we're in that kind of situation. But two, Lisa Lott has had experience all over that courthouse and done a good job in every role that she's played, from juvenile court all the way up to
And
state.
She's a fine person.
And she's a fine person, yes.
That's not to be taken lightly.
No.
No.
But go
so
ahead
that,
and talk
so
about
that,
the race.
So this is why the District 117 seat is opening up, and we've got two folks running on the Republican side who a lot of listeners might remember, and one of them is Houston Gaines, who's a young man in his early 20s who just recently graduated from UGA, was the student body president, and managed Mayor Denson's reelection campaign in 2014 when he was a teenager.
He's a kind of ahead of his years when he talk about it.
Right. I would
he's
say so,
grandson.
thinking back to
savvy.
When I was 18, 19, 20 years old, right. But
is that Judge Gaines' grandson?
He's Judge Gaines' grandson.
That's right.
And he is, he's an impressive young man who has been serious since birth, I think.
Yes, I told him that he's a young man with an old soul because he just is very mature and accomplished at a very young age.
I remember when he was running Mayor Denson's campaign, getting towards the end of it, and, you know, they didn't always appreciate everything Flagpole said about him, but I think at one point I said to him something like, you know, after this is all over, we should go get a beer or something like that. And he looks at me and he goes, "I can't drink." I was like, what? How old are you? I thought he was I assumed he was 25 or 28 or something, but
19, right?
But so the other guy who's running is another name that will probably ring a bell, but Doug McKillop. And that was Doug McKillop's seat up until 2012, when Regina beat him in the Republican primary, which happened because Doug had been elected as a Democrat and switched parties, which obviously really, really annoyed a lot of Democrats who then, because the district was redrawn in a way that a Democrat couldn't win it, all the Democrats crossed over and voted for Regina, and they beat Doug. And I think they only beat him by about 50 votes. But,
wow.
So that'll be a really, really interesting race to watch.
So he had some time in the seat then, as you were saying.
I think he was elected in 06. I think it was when it was Louise McBee's seat when she stepped down, I think, in 06.
When he was a Democrat.
Right, exactly. When he was elected three times as a Democrat. And then when the Republicans won everything in 2010, he switched.
That's right.
So he found
the Lord, is what he told us later.
Well, we've heard several versions of that story.
You can know the Lord and be a Democrat.
Oh, sure. But, you know, then he introduced that abortion bill, the fetal pain bill, the 20-week abortion ban, trying to kind of prove his conservative bona fides. But none of that really worked out. So then there's a Democrat running this time, though.
Deborah Gonzalez,
who's a lawyer here in town, an entertainment lawyer.
And she's an impressive woman. She's done a lot of interesting things.
Well, and the wrinkle here too is that, you know, Houston, you know, obviously, you know, Mayor Denson, a lot of people like to say she is a Republican, but, you know, she's technically a Democrat. So, you know, there are several kind of moderate Democrats who are supporting Houston, and so that kind of bodes well for him if he can get into the general. But, you know, having that support is probably going to be detrimental to him in the primary because you're not going to see that kind of crossover vote next year. I think that you saw in 2014, because there's going to be so much on the ballot on the Democratic side. You know, we're going to have a congressional primary, you know, possibly some other races. Whereas in 2014, there was nothing to vote for if you were a Democrat. So crossing over, that was an easy decision.
Right. So, right. Yeah, not so much now when you actually have to commit to some important races.
You know, I thought one of the interesting things is that young man, Houston Gaines, Houston, he's named after Houston County, but we call him Houston Gaines. Anyway, that in just 2 weeks after he announced, he raised $66,000, and Doug McKillop has put $107,000 of his own money in, but hasn't reported anything at this time. I think that's the way it is, right?
I think it was 102, but yeah.
102, yeah, 100,000 plus.
Now, that can change quickly.
That's right.
You know, and remember, we still have 10 months to go. So,
right.
I mean, this is going to be a high-dollar, high-profile race. Really, really one that's going to, I think, draw statewide attention.
Yeah. But I don't believe McKillop can do it. I thought he'd moved out of the district. I'm really surprised.
No, he lives in Oconee County.
Yeah, I'm just really surprised.
But Oconee County is part of the district
now. Think that he could come back to bat in this county, this area. It's really interesting.
Well, but I mean, it's only half Clark County. I mean, the other half is Oconee and Jackson and Barrow. And, I mean, you know, in 2012, like I said, he lost by less than 100 votes. You know, so I mean, and that included, you know, probably a couple thousand Democrats who voted for his opposition, which is, like I said, I don't think it's going to happen this time.
Been a lot of new people come in since then. I wonder, he probably doesn't have the name recognition he used to have.
Well, and that's true, and I don't know that name recognition is really something, maybe that would work in his favor or not. I mean, you know, he's so disliked by so many people in Athens because of the party switch that could really motivate people to turn out and vote against him.
I know, it'll be interesting. Politics always is in Athens, Clark County.
Well, this is definitely shaping up to be pretty interesting, just because there's those three stories right there, pretty interesting, right?
Oh yeah,
right there. So,
and this is July of 2017. You know, I mean, it's just we've got like five people running for mayor and like four people running for Congress and. You know, I've never seen it get so ramped up this early, and I guess it's just because of, you know, all of the energy.
Who else running for mayor besides? I mean, there's somebody Thomas and.
Well, officially, right now we've got Harry Sims, Commissioner Sims, Commissioner Gertz, Sam Thomas, who's a lawyer who lives out on the east side, Richie Knight, who owns like a marketing business downtown, and he's on the ADDA board. Is that it?
That's all that we have officially. We've heard of others that are thinking
about
it. No,
there will probably be more. And Antoine Stevens, who's kind of an interesting character. He's an African-American Tea Party guy. He's
what did
21
he call himself?
Old.
Compassionate conservative or something,
something like that.
Yeah. Right. Very interesting.
I always think it's interesting when people run for office who've, for mayor's office or Congress or something, who've never held office. They don't know how Robert's rules work. They've never, you know, they just, I don't know. It's bizarre to me that someone would do that. But people think they can, hey, look at all the Tea Party people of Washington.
Look at Trump.
When it was an asset, if you're in the Tea Party, to not have any political experience whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. Right. Anyway.
We'll see. Well, obviously, I'm sure that these races may change in the next few weeks and months, certainly because, as you said, it's July 2017. We've got a long way to go.
Before we leave the subject, let me just say that I think it's really important for the mayor position to have commission experience. And part of that is because this is such a strong manager form of government that if you're not careful, if you go in there without an understanding of whose role is what and what to watch, you really are at a larger deficit than you would be otherwise. And so I think that's an important thing in our community, understanding that needs to be there.
Because you're working with, you said, a very strong manager situation.
Mm-hmm.
So
you got to be a strong mayor or you cannot survive. You can do nothing, really, but be nice.
Right. Well, we are also going to talk about the governor's race, candidates running, so far announced candidates.
Well, and we got a visit on Saturday from Stacey Abrams, who's one of the candidates on the Democratic side, and she's the House Minority Leader, the top-ranking Democrat in the House.
Two Stacys are running.
Two Stacys, and they both spell it S-T-A-C-E-Y.
Right.
So it's like Denson versus Denson from 2014. But, so she and she drew, there were probably two or 300 people at her campaign rally, which, again, July 2017, that's kind of crazy.
Right.
But
but she's been to Athens before. She's really
been in and out of Athens
a lot.
And Evans has, too. And she's a double dog and actually donated $500,000 to the university for need-based scholarships a few years ago.
Huh.
And she's from Smyrna. But I don't think she's visited here since she announced her campaign. So you know, we've got two folks who aren't from Athens. I mean, they both really are from metro Atlanta but do have ties here or know the city. And Stacey Abrams made a kind of a jab at Brian Kemp, who also was from Athens, the Secretary of State, who's running for governor on the Republican side. And they've had a back and forth for years about Abrams registering. She has an organization that registers voters, and then Brian, as Secretary of State, is in charge of approving those applications. And there have been lawsuits and. All kinds of stuff.
That could get kind of testy, right?
Yeah.
So then he, you know.
Well, Kemp really has not been, he hasn't facilitated those kind of registration programs. He hasn't been supportive of broadening the vote.
No, and I mean, the Republican strategy is always to try to prevent, any group that might skew Democratic from going to the polls. We saw that seen in Georgia, North Carolina, Wisconsin, I mean, all over the country, that kind of thing is happening. So.
Right.
Well, we'll move on off those candidates, but there are plenty going to be in that race as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're going to have a lot of people this primary.
I think there's four or five people on the Republican side, in addition to Brian, Casey Cagle, the lieutenant governor, a couple state senators, Hudson Hill and Michael Williams, and then.
A lot of people out of the Capitol.
Right.
Right. And the two Stacys.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll move on to maybe the T-SPLOS projects, some of the latest tweaks going on there.
Yeah, the commission at their meeting on Tuesday, their agenda-setting meeting, they had a work session last week where they finally started to sort of get their hands into this T-SPLOS list. You know, we've been having these public hearings and people have been commenting, but the commissioners haven't really commented. And they made some changes that didn't go over very well, especially taking some money out of Firefly Trail. I think they took about $4 or $5 million out of Firefly Trail.
That's a good chunk.
Which was a $17 million project, and now it's down to 11 or 12. And so the Firefly Trail people are worried that that's not enough money to finish it. You know, and they wanted that money for, you know, some downtown infrastructure. You know, I think they put a bridge over the Tallahassee Road.
Tallahassee Road.
Back on the list and a roundabout at Millage and Whitehall. And, you know, those are all, I mean, those are all fine projects. But, you know, I think Firefly Trail is really kind of the central selling point for this whole thing that, you know, we've been working on it for 17 years and we can finally finish it, and we can finish it all the way to the county line. You know, and I just think if you, you know, a lot of people made this point at the meeting on Tuesday, you know, that if you don't finish it all the way, it's just going to be useless. And so people are going to be very disappointed by that.
Yeah, partial trail isn't exactly the same thing. You know?
Yeah, they're worried it might just dead end like in an industrial area in East Athens someplace, you know, or else they finish it all the way, but it's just gravel, you know, it's not even paved.
Well, I think what they were trying to do is to make it the program look more practical for the broader community, the broader audience, those people that might be hesitant to put more and more penny on every dollar. Mm-hmm. So I kind of understand what they're trying to do. My concern has always been that the special purpose has that word special in it, and that if you're not saying we're going to do this and this, but I kind of agree with Sharon Dickerson. What she said is, if we don't get these things done, people are not going to believe in these programs and these funding programs. And they have been kind of, quote-unquote, economical in the way that they've been doing some of the street stuff and the public utility stuff. They haven't hired outside people. They've, you know, let go the Ahiri and Company that was the manager. They've let them go. And so now we're really in a position where we're trying to do it with a staff that is limited and is only designed to do what's on our regular budget. So I think they really, in my mind, need to make a commitment to finishing projects within the period of time. And they're saying that the next program, we can put the other part in the SPILOS. And I don't have a problem with combining the two funding things, but I do have a problem with them not saying we're going to finish this.
The reason I like that, I mean, haven't a lot of the T-SPLOS stuff, I mean, it's almost like it's stuff that you would think in other places would come out of the general fund. But
like
this,
like road repaving?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But this is just, I mean, the Firefly Trail, once it's done, it's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not going to be repaving it a lot, and it will bring.
Well, if they pave it in the first place, they're not.
Right.
But if it's just a 7 mile gravel road,
that was a bad situation. And that guy didn't know what he was talking about. This is for cyclists and stuff.
I mean, it needs to. Yeah.
And, come on.
But I mean, it would be. I think it would be a draw. I mean, the number of people who go to the Silver Comet Trail and ride on that. I mean, and. Well, it sounds so stupid. It's just a nice thing. Lord, it's a quality of life issue.
It's not just a luxury either. I mean, it really is a transportation corridor. And
when
you look at the way that Firefly and the Greenway are all going to link together, it's going to be a real commuting option.
Yeah. We're finally going to have the alternative system that we've
been
talking about.
Darn it, Jim Thompson isn't here to he won't be here to be able to commute to the Banner Herald building.
I know. He finally would be able to.
He'd be able to just ride on in.
But this is an example of something I see them do over and over again, especially when it comes to these sales tax lists, is, you know, they don't put enough money into stuff. And they want to spread it out. You know, they want to fund as much stuff as they can, but then everything ends up under budgeted, and then they can't do what they want to do.
Well, actually,
I mean,
we've been over budget on a number of things.
Well, on a few things, but I can give you a lot of examples of stuff, you know, like the Clinton Street project that now they want to put back in T-SPLOS.
Well, look at
downtown. That was in 2005, they budgeted $5 million for that, and, you know, they didn't bid it out till 2015, and then it was $12 million.
Right, right.
And that's why we need another $7 million for
that. That's right, for downtown.
So, you know, they've already cut, the Citizens Committee already cut Firefly Trail by $7 or $8 million. Now they want to cut it again, you know, cut it from 25 to 12, basically.
Right.
Well, let me just say that the reason it's going to be another half-finished thing.
We need to understand who the culprit in this is. Just like Rebecca said, these are things that in the past they have not had to look to the general fund for these things because the state had the local area repaving program, LARP. They funded our gas tax.
Yeah.
That's what we got back from the gas tax. Well, they're not going to raise the gas tax. Oh, heavens, we're one of the lowest in the nation. So what they've done is they've given us this little plum where we, a regressive tax, where we can pay for what they used to pay for. And I don't, you know, we don't have the access to our gas tax anymore.
I wonder where does it go?
It all goes to Atlanta.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, they used to have a rule that they had to spend equally in every, it was divided up by congressional district.
Proportion to what?
And they got rid of that. Now it all goes to Atlanta.
It's great.
Yeah.
That's a nice little law.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not
sure that's completely true because I know that legislature has got to build the 6-lane highway to Willacoochee every once in a while to make South Georgia happy, you know. So, no kidding, there's a 6-lane highway to Willacoochee.
Is it the feds that are paying for the mess on I-20? You cannot believe it. Anytime I've gone to Augusta, I mean, I-20 is stopped in Thompson all the way to Augusta. It's like a parking lot. It was like 285. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that's an aside, which is kind of not to the point.
Yeah.
Can we leave this? This is really depressing, especially about the Firefly Trail. That's just really awful.
Yeah, that's awful. Well, people are very excited about the thought of that.
Something else, that they're also moving some of the costs for the fixing the infrastructure utilities in downtown into the T-SPLOS.
Right.
And that, again, I've said this over and over again, we keep paying for public works projects that should be paid for through our water revenues. And our revenues are really high. You know, we have a lot of profit there, and they're not carrying the load that they should. So we're using T-SPLOS. In this case, we use SPLOS in other cases. I disagree with that.
Yeah. I agree with your disagreeing.
Well, on that note of unity, we're going to move on to some recent protests over Medicaid caps and cuts. That certainly got some people turned out at the Arch recently.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, none of the people there was an activist or, I mean, they banded together and had a protest, but there were people there. There was this wonderful woman, Kathy Lynn Sanderson, who's moved here just a while ago. She and her husband from upstate New York. And I was just so curious. I didn't see, she didn't have a child. She didn't say she had a relative who had some, you know, developmental delays or issues or anything. And she just said, this is just such a horrible idea. It just makes me sick. And it's just wrong, you know? I mean, she was so outraged she had to come and show support. But if you see these families, I mean, they depend on Medicaid, and Medicaid lets these children have, you know,
a more normal life.
Well, just a meaningful life. And, you know, to plan for the future, to think, well, I'll finish high school, maybe I'll go to college, or I'll have some support, or have a job when I get out, or be able to, you know, to contribute. But these children didn't ask. This one little boy had some kind of very rare genetic disorder. Did he plan for that? Did his mother plan for that? I mean, he lives with a feeding tube. He's very small, and just thank God for ESP that helps a lot of these children. But it's just, I mean, Medicaid is so broad in the coverage, but this is the most vulnerable. This and the elderly are the most vulnerable populations. And when you see the people themselves turning out, people with cerebral palsy, people with Down syndrome, with autism, with, you know, genetic disorders or a combination thereof. I mean, anybody who's not moved by that doesn't really have a pulse. It's, right. I believe, and it's just, but just to, I mean, I hope that more people, like there's the Parent to Parent of Georgia, there's something called the ARC, and just these advocacy groups, Autism Speaks and stuff, I hope that they, you know, I know they're watching all of this and the machinations in Washington, but I hope that they will mobilize the parents, the friends, and the children and adults themselves to speak up or to show up, because it's, you have to take care of people. That's what I think. I think
the most vulnerable in the community.
I mean, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people disagree with that, but I'm sorry, if Jesus were alive, he never would stop vomiting over some of this stuff. that's my take on it.
I do know that it pays for care and therapy, and then some
medicine,
intangible
food, camps, counseling, medications, you name it. It's, you know, it helps people live and helps so the families aren't bankrupt or out on the street or more homeless people. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I think as long as our nation continues to refuse understanding that a large part of Medicaid supports Medicare people in nursing homes.
Right.
Medicare is a single-payer insurance program. Nobody would touch it, and they won't admit that that's what Obamacare can, you know, spread to our. So we're in, and look at the military. We're in a socialist situation here. We might as well admit in some ways that we have, that lots of people, our Congress, has, you know, sure insurance. We need to be in a situation where, like other countries, where we offer people what they need to fulfill themselves and therefore contribute as much as they can to our society.
Right. Well, I'd love to comment. There was a New York Times story about, you know, if you don't think you need Medicaid, think again about the elderly. And I left a comment and was contacted by the reporter, and we've been emailing back and forth. And he found some, you know, one person to tell a big story, you go small. And this woman had like $600,000 in the bank, and she got sicker and sicker and sicker. And the money just goes like poop through a goose. You know, it's gone. And she ends up on Medicaid. And, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, who pays the nursing home?
Well,
Medicaid.
And not only the elderly people, but once they get done taking your money, then they go after your kids.
I know. I know.
Right.
South Carolina Medicaid, you know, they want your house. Before you go on Medicaid, you sell your house. They get the money. Yeah, they'll go after it. Georgia doesn't go after the children. Georgia Medicaid is pretty mellow compared to other states. Other states, they
it's also so limited.
Right.
It offers very little of the benefits that are can be matched nationally.
Yeah. But anyway, it was very moving to see people protesting that.
Well, Rebecca, you have the last word today. I want to thank my guests, Rebecca McCarthy, Blake Odd, and Gwen O'Looney. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station, Flagpole, or WXAG. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.